Tonight we'll look by way of overview at the Old Testament book of Proverbs. The book is, of course, a very interesting book. It is one that is extremely practical in its admonitions. We might liken it to the book of James in the New Testament because of the practicality of the admonitions involved in the book. The title comes from the very first line in the book, the Hebrew word for proverb and the Greek equivalent. Both of those words indicate a comparison. And that's much of what you see in the book of Proverbs by way of comparison, one phrase with another or one verse with another. A proverb is defined as a short, pithy, axiomatic, self-evident statement. It is a general truth that is recognized by most people, something to be generally true, maybe not in every specific application. For example, in Proverbs 22 and verse 29, do you see a man skilled in his work? He will stand before kings. Now, that such a man would be successful is a general truth, not a universal one, because economic conditions can prevent this from happening, even in cases where a person happens to be very conscientious and very diligent about his work. But all other things being equal, a man diligent in business will be more successful than one who is not. So we must, when we read these proverbs, take care that we not make them say what they don't really say, or make them say more than what they say. Who wrote Proverbs? Well, Solomon wrote most of them, from indications in the book, and others were probably written by different ones, some called the wise in chapter 22 and chapter 24. Maybe some of the men of King Hezekiah, evidently they were compilers of the book. Maybe they did just a little bit more than compiling. Maybe they contributed something to the wisdom of the book. Agur in chapter 30 and verse 1. King Lemuel and his mother in chapter 31 and verse 1. But some think Lemuel might have been a pet name that Bathsheba had for her son Solomon. In which case, those would have been written by Solomon too. These are only a small portion of the 3,000 proverbs that Solomon wrote, according to 1 Kings chapter 4 and verse 32. A little bit of background information about the book. What the book of Psalms was to devotional life, Proverbs is to practical life. Someone has said, Proverbs made the heart warm toward God, or Psalms made the heart warm toward God. Proverbs made the face shine toward men, noting the difference between the two books and the practicality of Proverbs. Some Proverbs are grouped together in different groups, but most of the book goes from subject to subject without really any strict conformance to some type of connection between the themes that are talked about. Proverbs were an important teaching tool. Since most of the people could not read and manuscripts were very few, Proverbs were something that were very easily committed to memory. They were especially useful for teaching young children. And note the phrase several different times in the book to take advantage of wisdom, pursue wisdom, my son. The purpose of the book is to give moral instruction or knowledge and discretion, especially to the young, chapter 1 and verse 4, to whom God says, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent, in chapter 1 and verse 10. And Solomon gives as his purpose in compiling these writings in chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, to know wisdom and instruction, to discern the sayings of understanding, to receive instruction in wise behavior, righteousness, justice, and equity, to give prudence to the naive, to the youth, knowledge and discretion. The principal object that Solomon had in view was to really inspire a deep reverence for God, the fear of His judgments, and an ardent love for wisdom and virtue for people, according to a statement made by Adam Clark. Wisdom has been defined as the practical application of knowledge. But wisdom in Proverbs goes very much deeper than that. What wisdom is all about in the book of Proverbs, if we wanted to sum it up with one general idea, to get and grasp the importance of the wisdom that's in the book, we could define it as coming to see things as God sees them. And I think that would be a good way to describe that. In chapter 9 and verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. The contents of the book cover a wide range of subjects. It deals with attitudes and motives such as envy and anger, pride, self-control, love, humility, forgiveness, dishonesty, revenge, showing respect of persons. Those sort of subjects are very strong in the book. A very sharp contrast is drawn between wisdom and folly, between righteousness and sin, between vice and virtue. Social problems such as relations of husband and wife, of master and servant, of parents and children, of rich and poor, of rulers and subjects, those relationships are dealt with in the book. And many human experiences are reflected in these proverbs, such as care for one another, or joy, feebleness, sorrow, goodness, strife, justice, friendship, idleness, poverty, wealth, benevolence, education, pleasure, diligence, gluttony even, and success. Many things like that. You probably have an outline in your study Bible, if you have a study Bible, or if you have some study material about Proverbs, you'll see something very much similar to this, because in most outlines, the book is arranged very much like it was in Psalms, in five distinct categories or five groupings together. Proverbs of Solomon on the praise of wisdom. Proverbs of Solomon on the practicality of living a moral life in the next group. Hezekiah's collection, maybe with an emphasis on economic things, pursuing wealth and that sort of thing. And then the last two sections, mainly on dealing with God, men, and nature, and then the praise of the virtuous woman in the last section, which is a chapter that somewhat stands alone, chapter 31, stands alone in that grouping, that is. Many times when you pick up a lesson book or some study material on the book of Proverbs, you will find things not arranged like that, such that the lesson material guides you in a verse-by-verse study of the book. But what you will find a lot of times is different subjects are grouped together, and so you study those subjects and you're bouncing around all over the book of Proverbs looking at different verses, since they are somewhat disconnected like that in the book. Here are some of the practical subjects that are in the book. The subject of work and honesty, self-control, drinking and drunkenness, the tongue, nagging, being a wife and mother, and the discipline of children. Those are some subjects that are touched on repeatedly throughout the book of Proverbs, indicating that there's a great deal of wisdom to learn about those things, to live a righteous life before God as we live on the earth. So I think that's somewhat interesting to the person who studies the book. Key words in the book, the overwhelming key word in the book has to be wisdom, doesn't it? Key verses might be, you might think of many verses that come to your mind that would be key for you in the book, but just a few. Chapter 1, verses 5 through 7, a wise man will hear and increase in learning, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. To understand a proverb and a figure, the words of the wise and their riddles. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. That seems to be a general theme throughout the book. Chapter 3, verses 5 and 6, trust in the Lord with all of your heart, and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him, and He will make your path straight. That seems to be a fundamental idea in the book as well. If we want to think about key phrases that are in the book, the fear of the Lord is a phrase that's used repeatedly in this book, probably 14 times maybe, or somewhere in that neighborhood. As in chapter 9 and verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And to fear God means to hold Him in reverence and to respect Him and honor Him and to respect and honor His Word. Key chapters in the book might be chapter 3, chapter 4, maybe chapter 31. In chapter 3, verse 1, my son, do not forget my teaching, but let your heart keep my commandments. Verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. Verse 11, my son, do not reject the discipline of the Lord or loathe His reproof. And verse 13, how blessed is the man who finds wisdom and the man who gains understanding. And then from chapter 4, verses 5 through 7, acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. The beginning of wisdom is, acquire wisdom, and with all your acquiring, get understanding. These and other expressions of the blessings of wisdom are contained in this key chapter. And then in chapter 31, which extols the virtues of the virtuous woman, in the words of King Lemuel, we have one of the greatest tributes, really, I think, in all of literature for the virtuous and worthy woman. In this high and noble view, she is a good woman, a good wife, a good mother, and a good neighbor, all wrapped up into one chapter in the Bible. Her character and her life stand in sharp contrast to the character and the life of the woman that's described in chapter 7, for example. Both the children and the husband of the virtuous woman praise her. Verses 29 and 30 say this, many daughters have done nobly, but you excel them all. Charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, she shall be praised. If we think about purposes and themes in the book, this verse probably says a great deal about the purpose or theme in the book. Trust in the Lord with all of your heart and do not lean to your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge Him and He will make your path straight. Godliness is truly the happiest and best way of life. And this has an appeal to it, doesn't it? Very much like the parables of our Lord. Very much like the Beatitudes that were taught on the Sermon on the Mount. Very much like the book of James. Jesus said, not everyone that says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. There's the New Testament admonition to obey the precepts. James said in James 1 and verse 22, prove yourselves doers of the word and not merely hearers who delude themselves. So very much similar to New Testament admonitions is the theme or the purpose of this book. Some important things to notice. There are some personal duties in Proverbs, very much the same as those taught in the New Testament. And for that reason, some have highlighted the neglect that Christians have toward not only Old Testament books, but the book of Proverbs, how that it's somewhat neglected by Christians. But the admonitions in it are just as practical as they were when Solomon wrote them, because they're not directed necessarily to people who are of the nation of Israel or who are Jews or who are offering sacrifices and those type of things. Those things aren't mentioned in the book. But personal duties are. Personal duties like our duty to God, for example. Fear, the fear of the Lord is man's first duty. It is the beginning of knowledge, chapter 1 and verse 7. Without faith, it's impossible to please Him. For the one, he who comes to God must believe that He is and that He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. Hebrews 11 and verse 6 in the New Testament. And then in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13, second part of that verse, fear God and keep His commandments, for this applies to every person. So there is a duty toward God that is overwhelmingly obvious in the book in thinking about personal duties, but there's also a duty that people have to themselves. We must resist those things that would deprive us of salvation, of course. But we must also resist those things that would destroy our lives or the lives of other people around us in one way or another. Before honor comes humility in 15 and verse 33. In 16 and verse 18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before stumbling. Other pitfalls are trust in your riches in chapter 11 and verse 28. Envy or passion, which is the rottenness of the bones in chapter 14 and verse 30. Luxury, intemperance, anger, idleness, the misuse of our tongues. Man has a duty to himself, as James put it in the New Testament in James 1 and verse 27, to keep himself unspotted from the world. Chapter 22 and verse 1 of Proverbs said, a good name is to be more desired than wealth. So we have a duty to ourselves. And also what is highlighted in the book is the duty that we have to the people who live around us. Not only to ourselves in some selfish, exclusive kind of way, we also have a duty to our neighbors. And according to Proverbs, one's duty to his neighbor includes expressing sympathy to him and also cheer, helping him in times of need, being fair and honest with him in whatever dealings we have with him, and living peaceably with him. Those duties are highlighted in the book. And there are also family duties in the book. A child's first impression comes from his parents. And these first impressions are vital to the child's development and his future. Chapter 20 and verse 7 says, a righteous man who walks in his integrity, how blessed are his sons after him. Chapter 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. The importance of correction with our children is stressed in the book in several places. Also, the duty of children to their parents. The contentious wife is described in Proverbs 19 and Proverbs 25. Yet, he who finds a wife finds a good thing in chapter 18, verse 22. The model of virtue for every woman is the model described in chapter 31. The crown of her husband, the keeper of her home, the worthy woman. This shows the high position of wife and mother in the scheme of relationships. Like the book of Psalms, Proverbs has a universal appeal to a large number of people because it's not written exclusively for a specific segment of society. Its practical lessons are available and beneficial for all. The truths that are found there are generally true today just as they were in the days of Solomon. The book has been called the best guidebook to success a young man can follow. And there's a great deal of truth in that. But this is not necessarily success as the world defines it. And that's where people sometimes make a mistake. A great spiritual lesson is contained in the book if you just think about not so much the contents of the book, but who wrote the book and what was his life like. The wisest man who ever lived, because God blessed him with wisdom, Solomon was a good teacher, but he was a poor example. In his later years, he did not walk after the way of wisdom. His son, Rehoboam, followed his example rather than his counsels and became a foolish and evil ruler himself. What a tragedy that truly was. If we wanted to think about lessons available to us from the book of Proverbs, we might be here a very long time talking about those and thinking about those. But let us just say from a general standpoint that there are a lot of contrasts in the book that help people to see the difference between black and white, things that are unequal. This is good. This is bad. This is righteous. This is unrighteous. This is holy. This is evil. A lot of contrast. Proverbs shows a sharp contrast between the wise man and the fool, as the book describes those people. The wise man, of course, being the one that would follow the admonitions that are written in the book. He's the righteous man. He's the one who fears God. He's the one who keeps God's commandments. The foolish man is the unrighteous man who trusts in himself, and he's disobedient, and he's involved in wickedness. This is an important lesson, as Jesus taught in the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, in the parable of the two builders, to show the necessity of hearing and obeying the words of God in Matthew 7, 24 through 27. He also told the rich fool, the one who stores up treasure for himself is not rich toward God, in Luke 12, 13 through 21. And David speaks of the greatest fool of all when he said, "The fool has said in his heart, there is no God," in Psalm 14 and verse 1. Those who refused to have God in their knowledge were filled with all unrighteousness, and God gave them over to the lust of their hearts to impurity. God gave them over to degrading passions. God gave them over to a depraved mind. Paul to the Romans in chapter 1. Some of the contrasts that are actually in the book. Chapter 1 and verse 7, "The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction." Chapter 12 and verse 15, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man is he who listens to counsel." 28 and verse 26, "He who trusts in his own heart is a fool, but he who walks wisely will be delivered." Chapter 13 and verse 20, "He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." So you see this great contrast in the book, making it very clear about the importance of this contrast and the importance of pursuing the right choice and being the right kind of person. The book also shows a sharp contrast between the righteous and the unrighteous, those who obey the commandments of God and those who reject the commandments of God. He who turns away his ear from listening to the law, even his prayer is an abomination. Chapter 28 and verse 9. He who pursues righteousness and loyalty finds life and righteousness and honor, in chapter 21 and verse 21. The book also contains a sharp contrast between the righteous and the wicked. Watch over your heart with all diligence. From it flow the springs of life, in chapter 4 and verse 23. We are told, "For as he thinks within himself, so is he," in chapter 23 and verse 7. The idea is, however you think in your heart, that's who you really are. As a man thinks in his heart, so is he. And the purpose of Proverbs is, of course, that you will discern righteousness and justice and equity in every good course, so that you will walk in the way of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous, in chapter 2, verse 9 and verse 20. Do not turn to the right nor to the left. Turn your foot from evil, in chapter 4 and verse 27. My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent, chapter 1 and verse 10. 11 and verse 5, the righteousness of the blameless will smooth his way, but the wicked will fall by his own wickedness. And many other passages like this. And those are some of the obvious contrasts in the book that are very hard to mistake to be something else. A few other of the very important lessons in the book. One has to do with attitudes. God is supremely interested in what our attitudes are. He's interested in our thoughts and our life patterns. Much that Jesus taught had to do with the disposition of heart and life, as in the Beatitudes, which show the blessedness of the humble, the meek, the sorrowful, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, those who are pure in heart, the peacemakers, and the ones that rejoice in persecution. That's really about attitudes that people of God have. One's attitude of heart is a very important topic in the book of Proverbs, where envy and jealousy and hypocrisy and greed and hatred and self-conceit are all noted in the book. Watch over your heart with all diligence. From it flow the springs of life, in chapter 4 and verse 23. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? The question of chapter 26 and verse 12. There is more hope for a fool than for him. Hatred stirs up strife, in chapter 10 and verse 12, but love covers all transgressions. A statement that is somewhat familiar to New Testament students. Attitudes are very, very important. The fear of the Lord, as we mentioned before, is something that is exalted in the book. The importance of fearing God is really the central message. That's where wisdom begins. That's what it's all about if we're to be wise and noble people in this life. Fear the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, in chapter 1 and verse 7. Chapter 9 and verse 10. Chapter 14 and verse 26, in the fear of the Lord there is strong confidence, and his children will have refuge. 14:27, the fear of the Lord is a fountain of life, that one may avoid the snares of death. 19 and verse 23, the fear of the Lord leads to life, so that one may sleep satisfied, untouched by evil. From our fear of God, we learn respect for authority. We learn respect for authority in the home. And we learn respect for authority in our communities and in our nation. Therefore, my son, fear the Lord and the king. In chapter 24 and verse 21, fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Chapter 3 and verse 7. Chapter 23 and verse 12, apply your heart to discipline and your ears to words of knowledge. Chapter 23 and verse 17, apply your heart to discipline and your ears to words of knowledge. I guess I wrote down the wrong reference there because I've got the same statement, but maybe it is the same. Verse 12 and verse 17 of chapter 23. So you see the fear of the Lord being exalted very, very much there in the book. Another lesson that's very important in the book has to do with the speech of man. And this will be the final thing that we consider about the important lessons that are in Proverbs. The use of the tongue is a very prominent theme in the book. You know, Jesus said, for the mouth speaks out of that which fills the heart. A true principle. Jesus also said, I tell you that every careless word that men speak, they shall give an accounting for it in the day of judgment. Jesus himself showing how very important it is for us to guard our speech. The power of the tongue is strikingly described in the New Testament, in the book of James, in chapter 3, several verses. Paul admonishes, let your speech always be with grace, as though seasoned with salt, in Colossians 4 and verse 6. Solomon describes the beauty of graceful speech in this way. Chapter 25 and verse 11, like apples of gold in settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances. Chapter 15, and verse 23, a man has joy in an apt answer. And how delightful is a timely word. Chapter 15, and verse 1, a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Chapter 16, and verse 24, pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Chapter 16, and verse 13, righteous lips are the delight of kings, and he who speaks right is loved. Chapter 18 and verse 21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Chapter 13 and verse 3, the one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips comes to ruin. He who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles. Chapter 21 and verse 23. Chapter 10 and verse 11, the mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life. The speech of wise men and fools is contrasted in the book. The works of the wicked and the upright are contrasted. Of the seven things that God hates that are described in this book, in chapter 6, verses 16 through 19, five of those are associated with misuse of the tongue. The whisperer and the talebearer are also condemned. Chapter 16 and verse 28, a perverse man spreads strife and a slanderer separates intimate friends. Chapter 20 and verse 19, he who goes about as a slanderer reveals secrets, therefore do not associate with a gossip. Chapter 26 and verse 20, for lack of wood the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, contention quiets down. Very much similar to admonitions that we have in the New Testament along the same line. So, many lessons could be learned from Proverbs, a very practical book, a book that is extremely practical in teaching our children how to walk in righteousness in this life. Fear God and keep His commandments. This is the whole duty of every man. This is applicable to every person. And some of that wisdom is certainly seen in the book of Proverbs. Appreciate it. Love it. It's a very, very profitable book. Especially for those that are being trained by godly parents to walk in the way of the Lord. We can help you tonight in a spiritual way, help you become a Christian by baptizing you into Christ upon confession of Christ, repentance of sins, and belief with all of your heart that Jesus is the Son of God. We can do that right here tonight in this assembly and take care of that. You sinned in a public way that demands public correction. You want the prayers of the saints, we'll pray with you and for you that God will forgive you and restore you to a blessed place in His kingdom. We can accomplish that for you tonight among God's people, right here and right now. If we can help you in a spiritual way, please come tonight and let us know while we stand together and encourage you by singing this song.